This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Special edition of Your Money Matters, brought to you by our good friends at Affordable Interest Mortgage. 720-895-0500 is the number. Kurt Rogers with us. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine. How are you and the family?
Doing well, sir. Doing well.
Just kind of plugging along.
Absolutely.
One day at a time.
Yep, that's all I can do.
Just love this state, though. I mean, it has so much to offer.
I know, it really does. I tell you, you know, get the fluctuations in weather, which can come very quickly. I mean,
up,
you know, there's,
down.
I love when, you know, you look at times where the weather's really nice, and then they say it's going to snow tomorrow or something like that. And you're like, there's no way it's going to snow tomorrow with just the weather we have today. And then it does.
Here it is.
So you don't know.
And you know, at Thanksgiving, they were talking, the weather was so nice. You normally don't see that. There were people out doing all kinds of things. You actually kind of were stuck that you could put up Christmas lights.
Sure.
Over the thing, because the weather was too nice.
Yep, for sure.
Because you're not used to that in Colorado.
Yes, sir, for sure. Well, Kurt, before we get to our special guest today, let's talk on your end here of the mortgage world. What do you think the Feds are going to do in December and January here with rates?
Well, the Feds raised their rates the last time 3/4, but the inflation rate went down a half. And that sent a message to them. What all the articles that I'm reading is, we think that the Feds will only raise the rates by half a point in December and maybe by a quarter in January. The half a point in December is, to me, an indication that they're saying, okay, we're getting close to the top. You know, we're moving up there. Now, when the inflation rate went down, interest rates, and there were articles about this in the paper, the interest rates went down a half a point. Within 12 minutes, they had just dropped a half a point. It was biggest drop you had in like 47 years.
I was sort of say, that's,
yeah, it was
historic.
Huge.
Yeah.
And they've pretty well stayed down there. They'll sneak up a little bit, but like again this morning, they went back down again. So I think the Feds are going to start to see that things are starting to level out. Now, I'm not saying we're done. They're not going to quit. They're going to go through 23
sure.
and continue to do things. I think it'll be a half a point, and then you'll see what the inflation rate does. And if the inflation rate stays where it's at 7.7 or even goes to 7.8 or 7.6, it's going to be an indication that, okay, we're close to the end. And then things are going to start to what we call get back to normal.
Man, really.
To where people can now
start to plan.
It's
hard to remember what normal is after these last few years. And
well, yeah, I mean, it did a complete 180 in about 60 days in 2022. It
yeah.
just, things were here, and all of a sudden, 60 days later, they had changed drastically.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody knows that. Everybody
sure.
ran into that windshield real quick. They were trying to buy homes.
No doubt. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500 is the number. And, hey, as Kurt has said many times on the show these last few months, hey, yep, rates are up, and then they've dropped a little bit. But you know what? If you have any needs and you want to talk about mortgage and, you know, reverse mortgage, any of that stuff, Affordable Interest Mortgage can help you. So give them a call, 720-895-0500. Well, we're going to go to the phones, talk to our returning guest. It has been a while, but we have an author with us today, Justin Matott. Justin, thanks for being with us again. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing really well, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
Well, we enjoy having you. I think we need to refresh everybody's mind, and like, you were not born an author. You started out doing something else first. Like, you really got into a real job, right?
This is a real job. I was a corporate sales guy for MCI Telecommunications, and so I did that for a long time. I actually had 4 jobs out of college in sales and marketing, and then my clients would always say, you know, you're a great storyteller, why don't you do something with that? And my parents were both English professors and had said the same thing, so I started writing, I started writing my 4th book, and that book got picked up by Random House, and I gave them 20 or 30 days, and then I went to full-time speaker and author in 96.
Wow. So you've been doing this a while.
Yeah, 26 years now.
Jeez. You know, Kurt and I were talking a little bit before the show of just what it takes to write a book. For many people, they may not understand all of that. What's even the process of writing a book and then getting a publisher and all that when you first started? Kind of walk us through that.
Well, how do you think that what I think and put it on paper that it's going to make sense to somebody else?
I'm not sure it does. Well, what I always do is I have a very creative ADD brain, and I always come up with the idea for what I want to conceptualize into a book, and then I just start writing. And I basically don't really do a lot of outlining. I kind of let my characters take me on a journey with them. My first book I wrote that got published was a book called My Garden Visits, and I wrote that after my mom passed, and I started having some experiences that I thought were relevant and possibly interesting to other people. And so I started journaling, and then I was sharing that with some friends. And my brother-in-law is a very creative guy. He's an artist, and he said, "I think you finally found your book." And so that was really encouraging. So I found an illustrator and a designer and self-published 5,000 copies of the book. And when nobody's ever heard of you and you have 5,000 copies of the book show up at your house, it's a little bit of a panic.
Wow.
Fills my garage. And because I was in sales and marketing, I loaded up my Nissan Pathfinder and started just traveling around to different gift stores and bookstores. And when I had started writing the book, I went in and talked to this wonderful woman at Tattered Cover, and she was one of the buyers, and I explained to her what I was writing about. She said that she was very, very interested in that. And so she said, you know, we will certainly take your book in and do a lot with it, because I think the concept of it is really wonderful. So I was very excited about that because Tattered Cover is my favorite bookstore. And so then when the 5,000 copies show up in my driveway, I cruise down to the Tattered Cover, and I'm told that she's on medical leave. And I was like, oh, no, this is not good. Mm. And they said, well, there's another buyer here that you can talk to. So I talked to this really, really nice guy named Derek Lawrence. And so we started talking about the book. He says, oh, yeah, Nancy went on and on about this book. And we are just absolutely happy to be supporting you as a local. I'm a native Colorado, and so he was excited about that. And I said, well, how many copies do you want to start with? And he said, well, why don't we start with 5? And I said, 500? And he said, no, 5 books. And I said, that's not good news. And I had a case of 52 with me. They came in a case of 52, and I said, well, how about I do this? I sign one for you, and I leave one for Nancy, and you take the 50 books, and I'll give you net 120, whatever you need. And if they don't sell, I'll pick them up. And if they do sell, you know, I'll invoice you. And he said, well, that sounds fair. I said, but there's a caveat to this. I want it, and I told him the four places in the Tattered Cover I wanted it, because I'd always envisioned my book on the staircase and on the front tables and things. And he said, well, yeah, I mean, I can do that. And I said, okay. So he called me the next day at my office, and he said, so, Justin, did you send down all your employees to buy your book? Because we're out. And I said, oh, my gosh, what a great idea.
exactly.
And send my clients down there. And so he said, well, we're out of books. We need more books. I have a waiting list for it. And I said, well, how many will you take this time? And he said, well, why don't we take the 500? And I said, so you're really going to take 500 of my books? And he said, yeah. He says, the book is selling so well, I think we're going to do really well with that if I can have the same terms. And I said, oh, absolutely. He said, well, we'll put it in our 3 stores, and you know, we'll really get our sales staff behind it. And so I had 550 books at the Tattered Cover. So I started going to every other bookstore and saying, so the Tattered Cover has taken over 500 copies. And I went up to the Boulder bookstore, and the guy said, there's no way Derek got 500 copies. I said, well, here, call him. And so he called Derek, and he said, all right, well, we'll take 100. And then I went up to Fort Collins, and I grew up in Fort Collins, so I went up to the Stone Lion, and they took 100. And so all of a sudden, the books are just going. Mm. And 3 weeks after the book published, 4,700 copies were sold. And part of that was I got a phone call from the regional manager at Barnes & Noble, and she said, why have you not come in and introduced me to your book? Everyone is talking about this book. And I said, well, I'd be happy to have Barnes & Noble. I don't have a distributor, so I didn't think you'd be interested. And she said, okay, so bring me some books, and let's have a conversation about this. And I said, okay. She goes, you know, I have 13 stores, so what would you think about bringing 100 per store? And I said, I think that sounds really great. I don't know if I have that many, but I'll see what I can do. So she said, well, bring them over to the store. Let me take a look at them, and we'll make a plan. I said, okay. So I loaded up my Pathfinder. I went over to the Barnes & Noble over on, well, it doesn't matter where it is, but anyway, where the central office was. And she opened the box, and she looked at the books. She goes, oh, my gosh, we are going to sell so many of these books. And she goes, how about 150 per store? And I said, if I don't have that many, you can absolutely do that. So she took all the books I had, with the exception of about 100. And so I called this agent who had rejected me four times, but he always rejected me in a really nice way. He always said things like, I think you're a really great author. I don't think you found your book, but when you find your book, I would really love to have a conversation. So I knew I had found my book, so I called him, left him a message, and told him, I've got this book that I self-published, and I published 5,000 copies, and 4,700 copies are gone already. Actually, probably 4,800 at this point. And so if you could give me a call back, I'd love to know if you'd like to represent me. So he called me like 2 hours later, and he said, okay, here's what I need you to do. Put 3 books in FedEx, get it to me overnight, and send me 3 of them. And I'll take a look at it, and then we could have a conversation within the next couple of days. But do me a favor, don't talk to any other agents while I'm reviewing it. But I didn't have any other agents to talk to, so I said, yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
So I send him the books, and he calls me 2 days later, and he says, oh, my gosh, this book is so wonderful. Did you wonder why I asked for 3 copies? I said, no, I just thought that was standard. He said, one was for me, one was for my wife, and one was for my mother. And they've told me that if I'm not your agent, they're not going to talk to me anymore. And I think I like these ladies. So he said, well, can you be in New York in 2 weeks? I said, no, I'm actually going to be at the Olympics. He goes, oh my gosh, you're an Olympian too. And I said, no, I won a trip to the Olympics and I'm picking my team. It was the Atlanta Olympics. He says, can you come from Atlanta to New York? And I said, yeah, of course. So we went down and had just the greatest time at the Olympics. And so I flew up to New York, and he picked me up and took me to his house. And I didn't realize who this guy was. I mean, I'd done my research, but he was Hank Ketcham's agent. And he lived next door to Martha Stewart. I mean, he was a very, very wealthy guy.
Big-time guy, huh?
Yeah, big time. And so, and his name was Jacques de Spoorberg, and he was actually a Viscount in Belgium. So he's like a royal guy. So it was just a really, really nice gentleman. And so we went and we met with 12 different publishers. And I mean, it was just like a Cinderella story for me. And so we're meeting with all these publishers. And the first day we went to lunch with people at Random House, and the woman who was the publisher for Ballantine Random House, her name was Judith Kerr, and she was just a very, very nice woman. And she said, she leaned over and she took my hand and she said, I will have this book. And I said, why do you like the book so much? She said, the chapter that you have on adoption was just, I've never read anything like it. It just really very much appealed to me. And so what I'd like to do is I'd really like to publish this. And I knew enough about her. She had come from Australia, and she said, this is going to be my first book, so I will treat it as so it's my own baby. And I thought, you know, this is absolutely the right choice. So we got done with all the publishers in 2 days. So Jacques said, okay, so next week, Thursday and Friday, I need you to take off of work and be available to me because I'm going to have an auction on the book. And he explained to me how an auction works. You have a floor amount, and then it starts from there. And so in the interim, I got this phone call from this woman named this woman at Harper Collins San Francisco, and she said, I'd like to talk to Justin Matot, the author of My Garden Visits. And I thought one of my friends was pranking me, and so I said, what do you want to talk to him about? And she said, well, I'm very interested in his book, and so I'd like to talk to him about publishing the book. And I said, okay, And I didn't really believe that she was who she said she was. So I said, well, let me call you back just to make sure that this is legitimate. She's like, well, that's fine. So I called back, and sure enough, HarperCollins in San Francisco, can I help you? I said, okay. Well, this is really who it is. And so they attached me into her, and she said, I've never had anybody do that. But I said, well, I just wanted to make sure this was legitimate. She goes, well, this is very legitimate. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk to you about setting up a contract for this book. And I said, well, that's fine. So how much would you give me for the book? You know, I just kind of went brass tacks, and she gave me a number, and I was like, wow, okay, well, I really like that. And she said, well, so this deal is good. Do you have any other publishers that you've talked to? And I said, no, not yet. And she said, well, do me a favor and let me be the first publisher. I said, you know, can I ask you a question? What about the book appealed to you the most? And she told me exactly, you know, from being a mom and from the content of it. And it was obviously something that she enjoyed on a very personal level. And I said, so will you do me a favor? Will you take your business hat off and put your mom hat on for a second? You know, you've read my book. You know, my mom is gone. If you were my mom, what advice would you give me? And she took
wow,
a long...
what a question.
Yeah, that's putting her on the spot.
Yeah, and so she said, well, Justin, I'll tell you the truth. If I were you, I would get an agent because I think this book is going to be really big. And I would really like to be in the running for the book. So do me a favor. Make sure that you have an agent in mind. And I said, well, actually, yes, I'm going to call an agent that's rejected me several times. His name is Jacques Spolberg. And she goes, oh, my gosh, Jacques and I are very good friends. Well, you tell Jacques the amount that I've given you, and I promise you he's going to be very interested. And I said, okay, I will absolutely do that. So when Jack called me, I told him, well, you know, I already have a floor offer on this. And I told him the amount. He says, oh, my gosh, that's wonderful. We have a great place to start this auction. So I said, well, she made me promise that she would be in the running for the book. And he says, well, absolutely. I'll call her today and let her know, you know, what my plans are for the book. And I said, okay, that's wonderful. So she dropped out the first day because it got too rich for her blood. But at the end of the second day, Random House, Valentine, and Simon & Schuster were tied. And Doc said, so this is your decision. What do you want to do? And I said, well, the conversation I had with Judith really indicates that I think that's probably who I should choose. He said, I think she's a perfect choice for you. So,
wow.
So we contracted with her for the first book and the second book, and then the then in the interim, they set me up with these publicists on the East Coast and the West Coast, and the woman out in California said, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd really like to see if you could go on a tour and spend a lot of time out there. And so Random House was going to send me out on a nationwide tour, and
I mean, Justin, excuse me, but man, you had to feel like, what kind of dream am I in? I mean, just listening to how all of this fell into place,
just one after another.
I would assume rarely ever happens for an author.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you was, where do you get your ideas from the books? Now, the fact that your mother died and you wrote that first one, but where do you get your ideas as you go along?
Well, what I try to do is there's two main prongs to my speaking and my books. And one is anti-bullying messaging, and the other is humor. And I've designed three books for children with dyslexia because my older brother had dyslexia. And I've had so much fortune with the kids, you know, that they don't like reading because it's so difficult for them. And they end up reading these books, and they think they're funny, so it kind of pours them through the books with me. And so what I try to do is I try to think, you know, I try to think like a child when I'm writing a child's book. And, like, if I'm writing a book for middle schoolers, I try to think, you know, where was my brain at in middle school? And
Mine's still there. It's okay.
Scary thought. Yeah, when I think about me as a middle schooler, I was like, okay. But, you know, I think what happens is I come up with an idea. I come up with characters that I want to populate a story with. And then what I want to do is I want to write a book that I would enjoy reading. And so I think about my reader the whole time I'm writing, and I kind of like envision a certain kid that I meet in a school who might have had a conversation with me and told me they didn't like reading, but they really like Diary of Wimpy Kid. And I said, so how many books have you read? All of them. Well, so you do like reading. It's just you have specific things you like to read about. And, you know, that's how we all are.
Sure.
And so,
so many of your books are about kids. It sounds like when you get into bullying, you wrote three books about the dyslexia, but you said you wrote books about bullying.
Yeah. So I have a six-book series, and it's all told by this kid who starts in fourth grade, and the last book is in eighth grade. And in the first book, he's being bullied at school, and he overcomes his bullies with his sense of humor. And it's, you know, a thinly veiled autobiography. Because his experience is really based on the experiences I had. I wore an eye patch and a leg brace in fourth grade, and you know, the bullies thought it was real fun to make fun of me and kick me around, and my dad basically said, you know, you're a really funny person. If you go to school and make those bullies laugh, they're going to be nicer to you. And my dad was an expert in anti-bullying because he was the 11th of 11 children. Hmm. And he had a lot of big brothers that were picking on him, so, you know, I took my dad's advice. I went to school and made the bullies laugh. And then, you know, all of a sudden they saw me with different eyes. And so what I want to do when I'm in a school is I want to encourage kids that are being bullied to take their power back. And I want to encourage bullies to consider, you know, what is it about you that's broken that makes you feel like you need to push people around like that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I have one story that's just absolutely phenomenal and a result of, you know, one of my assemblies years ago.
Justin, tell you what, can we hit a break real quick? When we come back, you can tell us that story?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, we'll do that real quick. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio and a special edition of Your Money Matters. Author Justin Matata is with us, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Here's why you need personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh on your side. He understands the way the jury thinks. In the context of a personal injury case, you have been hurt by someone else's negligence. The idea is that you're going to try to recover so that you can get back to where you were just prior to that incident occurring. What that really means from a juror's perspective is that you're going to be asking them to award you money. So when we talk about fairness, we're talking about six people that you don't know. Those six people hear evidence and make a unanimous decision that will decide what the fair value is. When you're the one that's hurt, you have a good idea what you think it's worth. The question is, can you persuade those other individuals, whom you don't know and weren't witnesses, to believe that's what the case is worth? Kevin Flesh understands the way the jury thinks. Call now for a free consultation, 303-806-8886. Flesh and Beck Law. They get results.
The Outdoorsman's Attic is Colorado's very own outdoor gear consignment store. From live bait to lanterns, firearms to ammo, packs to sleeping bags, all the fishing gear you could ever hope for. And if you need some decoys for the waterfowl season, stop into the Outdoorsman's Attic. Hey, this is Scott Watley here again for my friends at the Outdoorsman's Attic, and they've got hunting, fishing, and camping gear with huge savings up to 70%. You'll find new and pre-owned items to choose from, and since the inventory changes daily, hey, this is a store you need to stop in at least a couple of times a week. Reviews, here's what a few of their customers have said. Cody says, hey, two floors of pure outdoorsman paradise. Mickey said, I love this place. Great small business, family owned and run, lots to look at and good prices. Amy says, if you need good camping and outdoor gear, go here first. Support a local small business. Such great finds. Everyone is so nice and helpful. So save big. Get to the Outdoorsman's Attic today on all of your outdoor gear. 2650 West Hamden Avenue in Sheridan. Tell them Scott sent you.
Thinking rates are too high to buy a home? Wish they were in the threes or fours? Well, your wait is over. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. With a 3-2-1 buy-down, you can now purchase a home at 3.193% first year, 4.913% second, 5.913 the third, and the remaining years at 6.913 with an APR of 6.985. If rates go down, refinance and save even more. On a $400,000 loan, your monthly payment would be over $748 a month less the first year, $511 the second, $262 the third, with a total savings of over $18,000. Before you buy, take aim, 720-895-0500. 3-to-1 buy-downs available up to 95% loan-to-value. If you're thinking about home ownership, now may be the best time to purchase. Call Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Own your new home and save thousands in payments. That's 720-895-0500. 80% LTV, 30-year fixed, 6.985% APR, 740 FICO, primary home, rates as of 11/16. NMLS 298191, and rates subject to change.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio and a special edition of Your Money Matters, brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage. If you're just joining us, author and speaker Justin Matott is with us. You can check out his website, and it is just that, justinmatott.com, and that is M-A-T-O-T-T.com. And his number is 303-525-3817. Again, 303-525-3817. If you want to contact him, maybe about speaking to a group or something like that. Now, Justin, real quick, and I want to get to your story, but for folks to get your books, can they just go straight to your website and get those?
Yeah, they can go to my website, and I can sign them if they send me an email. And my email is just justin@justinmatott.com. And I always provide a buy three, get one free special.
Okay, great. Yeah, and I saw that on here. So we will.
Now, you've written 32 books, haven't you?
I've written more than that, but published, yes.
Okay, you published 32.
Right.
Since in 20-some years, that's like you're getting after it over a book a year.
Yes. Wow. I had some years where three publish and some years, like this year, I didn't have a book published. I'm working on a time travel series that I'm hoping will come out soon.
Man, that is so cool. Just to have that thought process, Kurt.
Well, I mean, I've looked at some of his books. You go to his website and you see the covers and you can see the humor in the covers. And I was going to ask you about that before you get to your story. You say you have an illustrator and a designer. I would have never thought an artist or an author would want to have somebody illustrate. But until I looked at your book covers.
Yeah, they make me look pretty good.
Good deal.
They actually would make, like you talk about younger kids in middle school and in junior high, actually want to look at the book. It was pretty interesting.
All right, go ahead and go to your story you were going to tell us about.
Okay, so when I visit schools, I do assemblies, and I've been to this one particular school over 20 times. And so about 12 or 13 years ago, I was just starting the series that starts with Go Ask Mom. And that was the one we were talking about earlier where, you know, the kid is in fourth grade and he's getting picked on and bullied. And when I was writing it, I wanted to test it by telling the story to an audience and see how they responded to it. Because kids, you know, they're really wonderful. Their faces show everything. If you're talking about something that's boring, they'll sure let you know. And if, you know, their laughter is what really makes me realize, okay, this is what I really need to heighten in these stories. So I went to the school and I was doing an assembly, and I decided I was going to tell the story that the first book was based on, my fourth grade experience. And so I go into the story, and I've never really told it out loud very many times. And so I go into the story and I start, you know, watching the crowd and watching their responses to it. And there was this boy sitting in the middle of the assembly. He was a fifth grader and just a really big kid. He was over 6 feet tall and just a, you know, really large fifth grader. And I start telling the story about these three bullies pinning me down on the playground and you know, punching me out. And all of a sudden, this guy just this huge outburst. And he starts, you know, yelling, "You should never let them do that to you." And I stopped and I looked at him. I said, "Well, there's nothing I could do about it. You know, there were three of them. They're a lot bigger than me." And he says, "Well, you should have defended yourself." And I said, "Well, I really didn't have anything to defend myself with." He was not very happy with the fact that I, you know, didn't fight these kids. And then he said something very interesting. He said, well, if it were me, I would have kicked their butts for you. And so all of a sudden I realized, you know, this kid, there's something about him that, you know, this is really has this visceral response to. And so all of a sudden one of the teachers comes over and she goes, you cannot interrupt this assembly. You're out of here. And he starts yelling, and he's yelling all the way out of the assembly. You know, I just would have defended him. I would have beat those kids up for him. And I thought, you know, that's really interesting that he has such a response to this. So it was lunchtime, and I was in the teacher's lounge, and the counselor came in, and she said, the boy that interrupted your assembly would like to come in and talk to you. He's really sorry. He feels very bad. And I said, well, so what's the scoop with him? She goes, well, he's the biggest bully in the school, and, you know, his response was just very odd. He doesn't usually respond like that. And I said, well, I'm absolutely happy to talk to him. And she said, well, do me a favor, you know, let him talk and, you know, be gentle with him because, you know, he's kind of a fragile kid, even though he doesn't look like it. And I said, okay. So he comes in, and his name's Ryan, and he comes in, and just tears are flowing down his cheeks. And he just walked up to me and said, Mr. McConaughey, I'm so sorry. I was so rude to you. You seem like a really nice person, and I'm really sorry. And I said, it's okay. And I said, can I ask you a question, though? So you interrupted the saddest part of my story, and you started laughing. And so what I'd like to know is, why did you think that was funny? And he looked at me, and he said, I didn't think it was funny at all. I thought that was really sad. And I said, okay, and so why was your response so just out there? And he said, well, I really don't want to tell you. And I said, well, okay, you don't know me, but would you be willing to tell the counselor? She really likes you. You know, she speaks very highly of you. And he said, well, she's the only teacher in this whole school that likes me. And I said, well, I find that hard to believe, but she really does. And so I said, well, I need you to do me a favor, Ryan. I need you to promise me that you will tell her why you had such a response to that story. And I'm going to check with her to make sure that you do. And he said, well, I will. I promise. And I said, okay. So at the end of the day, she comes over and she said, can I have a few minutes of your time? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so she said, well, the conversation with Ryan really illuminated some stuff. All of a sudden, he started talking. And I said to him, I said, Ryan, I have a question for you. It's a really hot day, and you're wearing a long-sleeve shirt. You're wearing long pants. You've got it buttoned all the way up to your neck. Why are you always, I mean, I can see that you're sweating. Why are you always dressed so covered? And she said, he just burst out crying and said, I can't tell you. And she said, Ryan, roll up your sleeves. And when he rolled up his sleeves, he was black and blue. His whole body was just black and blue. And she said, who's doing this to you? And he says, well, I can't tell you that. She said, Ryan, you have to tell me. And so anyway, long story short, she finds out, you know, it's his stepfather. Hmm. And his stepfather's been abusing him and his mom and his sister. And she said, well, Ryan, this ends today. So she called the police, and the police went and arrested him and put a restrictive order on him that he couldn't go near the family. And so she said, well, you know, Ryan is very thankful that you were willing to talk to him and help him in this situation. I said, well, it's absolutely my pleasure. And so she said, well, I know you're coming in the spring. Would it be possible for you and Ryan to have a conversation? I said, absolutely. And so at the end of the day, I was walking out to my car, and Ryan came up to me, and he said, Mr. Matat, thank you so much for talking to me today. I said, absolutely, Ryan. And I gave him a hug, and I said, you know, I think you and I could be great friends. And he looked at me, and he says, you wouldn't want to be my friend. Nobody wants to be my friend. I said, I want to be your friend. And he said, well, I want to be your friend. I said, well, it sounds like we're friends then. So we have this great conversation about, you know, all the stuff that's going on in his life. And he doesn't talk to me about any of the specifics. And I didn't push him because, you know, he's just a kid. And
sure.
I thought, well, you know, that was a good day because, you know, this kid is not going to have to deal with this horrible stepfather anymore. Hmm.
You do a lot of those school visits and assembly type things, don't you?
Yeah, I do a lot of them.
and mainly talk about bullying?
No, I talk about literacy. I do creative writing workshops with kids. And you know, what I try to do is I try to spark an interest in kids to, you know, utilize their sense of humor or whatever it is that they do best. You know, I always tell kids, you know, there's only one you, and you need to be the best you can be. And so whatever it is that you love, plan on doing that as for your future. And I think what's interesting is I think that really falls on ears that, you know, to hear. So I came back in the spring, and Ryan was the first to greet me when I came in the door, and he just walked up to me and he just hugged me, and he said, "Mr. McCott, you saved my life." And I said, "I saved your life?" He says, "You saved my life, you saved my mom's life, you saved my little sister's life." And I said, "How did I do that?" He said, "Well, by, you know, being a person that, you know, was there for me." And mm-hmm. because, you know, as a result of our conversation, I was able to talk to my counselor and get out of that situation. And then it was the cutest thing. He just looked at me and said, "Mr. McCott, I really love you." And I said, "Well, thank you." I said, "That's very sweet of you. I told you we'd be really good friends." And so he said, "Well, I just think you're probably my hero and probably going to always be my hero." And I said, "Well, thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate that." And so that time, the council came up and says, "Well, here's a switch." So now, whenever somebody is bullying somebody out on the playground, Ryan is the first to step up and say, "You can't do that to people here," and you know, stand up to people. And
so, as you let me ask you this: when you visit the schools, and we heard a lot of this during the, you know, election and all the different things about the schools and, you know, our reading levels for kids, all of that. What do you kind of see when you go into schools? Just kind of overall your view of what you see when you go in those schools and talk to kids about reading.
Well, I think one thing that's been very interesting in my travels is the majority of teachers at schools are women, and the majority of the books that they like reading are things like literature that, like Anne of Green Gables and things like that. And, you know, a fourth grade boy is just not interested in reading that at all. You know, he wants to read something gross or something about, you know, guys with kids.
Some action.
Get some action there. And so, I just have these constant dialogues with teachers about, you know, so my dad was an English professor, and my dad's point of view was, you know, if you're reading a comic book, I don't care, you're reading. And that's mm-hmm. always been my thing with my sons and with kids is, you know, no matter what you read, it's worth reading. If you like Popular Mechanics, then read it. You know, I mean, there's some kids that are very, very nonfiction based and not interested in fiction at all. So I wouldn't recommend my books to them. I would recommend books that I know that would be something that would appeal to them. And that's what I always try to find is, you know, what's the common ground that you could, that would interest them in, you know, wanting to read more. So going back to Ryan, I find books at farmers markets a lot. And I was at this farmers market at Southwest Plaza. And this family that had been coming to see me a lot came over, and this man, when they first started, he has two sons, and when they first started coming to see me, his sons were like, "Dad, I don't want to read. I don't like reading. It's boring." And his dad said, "Well, my friends are reading this series with their sons, and so we're going to read it together, and you really don't have a choice about it." And, you know, the kids were not real pleased about it, kind of giving me dirty looks. And the really cool thing was by the end of that summer, one of the boys came to me and said, "Hey, Mr. McCott, you know what I'm going to do when I grow up?" I said, "What are you going to do?" He says, "I'm going to be an author like you." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, you know, I started reading your books, and I really, really like them. But then I started reading other books, and I was like, wow, these are even better. And, you know, I want to write a book like this." And I said, "Well, I think that's awesome." And, you know, so that boy, you know, he found his voice and found what he wanted to do with it. And I've actually talked to him multiple times since, and he's working on a trilogy right now, a fantasy trilogy. And so the family was talking to me, and the dad made this comment. He said, "Well, Mr. McCott, I just want you to know you are probably my biggest hero because you've really changed the dynamics of my family."
And I thought, you know, that's really wonderful. Well, while I was talking to him, this man walked up, and just a mountain of a man, you know, probably 6 foot eight, 350 pounds, you know, muscular. And he walks up, and he hears the dad say this, and he says, well, you have no idea who you're talking to. This guy is probably the biggest hero you're ever going to meet in your life. And I looked at him, and I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, I don't want to interrupt you anymore, but, you know, I want to talk to you when you're done. And so I signed a couple books for the boys, and they went. And then he said, Mr. Matat, I know you don't recognize me, but do you remember a kid named Ryan who came into the lunchroom and was crying? And I said, oh, my gosh. And I recognized him. And I said, Ryan, that's you. And he said, yeah, it's me. And I said, oh, my gosh, that is the coolest thing.
wow.
So his girlfriend said, Ryan, show him the tattoo. Well, Ryan's covered in tattoos, so I'm not sure what she means. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. And she goes, no, he'd really like it. Show him the tattoo. And so Ryan turns around, and on his calf, he's got my face tattooed on his calf. And above it, my name, and below it, my hero. And I said, Ryan, you tattooed my face on your calf. He said, I hope you don't mind. I said, I don't mind at all. I said, that's such an honor to think that you'd be interested in that. And
wow, what so a said, cool well, story.
Yeah, that's an impact. I mean, you hit a nerve when you started with, and he made the stood up in the assembly. You hit a nerve.
Right. Well, and the cool thing is now he was in the military police, but now he's in domestic police. And what he does is he goes into families where they're being abused, and he makes sure it doesn't happen anymore. And he said to me, he goes, and you know, when I walk into a house, people listen to me. I said, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, at 6'9", yeah.
Once again, the website, justinmatott.com. And again, that is MATOTT.com. And as Justin said a few minutes ago, hey, if you order three books on his website, you'll get a fourth book there and for free. And Justin, can they write into you then and ask you to sign those, or how does that work?
Yeah, if they send me an email and just tell me who each book goes to and then tell me what their fourth selection is, because they don't put that in the cart, and to whom I should sign it to, then I can ship them off to them.
Okay, and that's just Justin at justinmatott.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. All right, we got to hit our last break here, Justin. Hang with us, and we'll come back with more right after this.
Do you know what direction the stock market will go? Nope, no one does. But it's extremely important to discover the tools you can use if the market goes up, down, or sideways. These same tools could be used for income strategies or long-term wealth strategies. Text the word investing to the number 210-210 and join us for a free investing class right here at OTA. Text the word investing to the number 210-210 today. Also, check out the podcast, Investing and Trading Live, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before we get back to our guests, let me tell you about Stack Optical. And I just want to say a personal word of thanks to Alan for taking care of me, my wife, Victoria, and our optical needs, and many friends that we've sent there. And Alan has been doing a great job there. Family owned and operated since 1968 is Stack Optical. And it's only $69 for an eye exam. So call them today, 303-321-1578. And mention you heard them here on KLZ 560, and we'd appreciate that. But hey, if you're looking for some new glasses, they've got a great selection of frames. If you need contacts, maybe you've broken your glasses and you need repairs, it's a one-stop shop, so to speak, at Stack Optical. Hey, it's free parking, easy parking at their location right off Monaco and Evans, 2233 South Monaco Parkway, 303-321-1578. StackOptical.com is a website. Check it out. And as I always say at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference.
Turn a normal day into an adventure on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Caranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride around town. Just try it. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
Choosing Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center almost 20 years ago was one of the best decisions we ever made for our pets. Hey, this is Scott Watley, and I know it's a busy time of the year for all of us, but it's no reason to forget about our pets. Our pets are a part of our family, and they need their checkups and preventative care just as we humans do. Whether a pet is new to the family or has been a family member for many years, regular checkups are the foundation of our pet's overall health. Depending on your pet's age, a preventative care visit will include the basics, such as an exam and vaccinations, diet and weight management, and parasite preventatives. But it could also involve a spay or neuter discussion, microchipping, concerns about house training, or behavior issues. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, the medical team will take the time to get to know your pet and address the concerns you have about your pet's care. It's what your pet deserves, and it's good medicine. Whether your pet needs medical, dental, or surgical care, boarding, grooming, behavior training, pet foods, or pet care products, you'll find it at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, the place where my pets go. Call today, 303-708-8050. That's 303-708-8050. And don't forget to visit their website at LoneTreeVet.com.
This is KLZ 560, your home station.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio and a special edition of Your Money Matters, brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage. Once again, any mortgage needs, give Kurt a call, 720-895-0500. If you're just joining us, speaker, author, Justin Matott is with us. Once again, his website, justinmatott.com. That's M-A-T-O-T-T.com. And if you want to get in touch with him, maybe about speaking at an event or a school or an assembly of some sort, give him a call, 303-525-3817.
Justin, a question I want to ask you. You, like you said, you've written a lot of books, and you just kind of sit down and start going through them. You picture them in your mind. What advice do you have? Because I know a lot of people like myself. I'd like to write a book. I would have no clue on how to get started. I wouldn't know how to come up with the chapters. I wouldn't know any of that, but I have a thought and an idea. Is that what it takes? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, so what I would do is, you know, write down your idea and then start to articulate it as a story. And again, keep in mind, who is it that is your target to read that story? And then, you know, take that, you know, just commit to writing it down. And what I always do with a book is I want to answer the questions, who's in the book, where does the book take place, where does the character take place, when does it happen, why am I writing it, what happens in the book. And so by creating that kind of storyline, I mean, and always write a book that you would want to read.
That makes sense. Yeah, because if it interests me, that might interest somebody else. But if I'm trying to write something I know nothing about, that'd be kind of goofy.
Wow. So, Justin, are there any places that you're going to be, you know, any of these bookstores, or you have any kind of public appearances coming up?
Yeah, everything is on my website, on the calendar.
Okay.
And I've got a lot of stuff going on for the holidays.
All right, good deal.
I noticed you're at the Aspen Grove Indoor Market.
Yeah, we're there every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then the whole week of Christmas, with the exception of Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
So if somebody's been listening to the show and they kind of want some ideas or they want to come over and talk to you, they can see either. What times are you there? You said Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, they're from 10 to 6.
Oh, so you're going to be, and you'll have some books there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm signing my books while I'm there, but I'm happy to help anybody with advice about. I actually had a young lady, I'd been to her school years ago, and she came and said that her boyfriend's really interested in being an illustrator. And then yesterday she sent me an email with his illustrations. And so I sent her back an email letting her know, here's what I would do if I were him. And I'm happy to help people. I had, you know, many people help me when I was trying to get published. And, you know, I know a lot about getting into the publishing world. And so I'm happy to help anybody that needs it.
Well, that's great. So on this matter, I just want to touch on this bullying aspect again, because a lot of times, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume a lot of times the kids don't even go home and share that with their parents that they're getting bullied, do they?
No, you know, and the thing that's really sad about the age we live in now is, you know, it used to be like when we were in school, you know, when you left school, got on the school bus or got picked up from school, then the bullies didn't have any reach towards you. But now, with the Internet,
good point.
You know, the bullies are using all kinds of social media to continue the bullying. And you know, so I think you know, kids can hardly get away from it, which, you know, is very sad. But I think when I'm in schools and I talk to a bully, you know, 90% of kids who bully are being bullied in some way, and they just have a lot of anger, so they're trying to find power, you know, by exerting their power on someone else.
That's Ryan. And that story you said about Ryan fits that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, what I always try to do is, you know, I try to tell the kids that are being bullied, you know, just don't let that happen to you. You know, pull back your power and don't let somebody do that to you. And you know, to understand a bully and why they are doing what they're doing, you know, people aren't mean just to be mean. I think a lot of times those bullies are just having a lot of problems at home or with other kids, and so they have to exert some source of power.
Well, I think you said it earlier when you first, I think you used the term broken. You know, what's broken in you? And I, you know, and unfortunately, that's probably the case. But I don't know, man, just being a teacher today, Kurt, I think is very, very tough. And you wonder if teachers have the time, take that time to talk to a student like Ryan that, you know, Justin.
Well, like
you
said, he only had one friend.
You took that time to do that and just to talk to them. And a lot of times that's what it is, man, if people would just sit down and get to talk to each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, I mean, I know a lot of teachers. I'm married to a teacher. You know, teachers go into the profession to help kids and to, you know, to be there in a way that, you know, for that child to make their lives better. And, I mean, rarely do you meet a teacher who isn't trying to do something to change the world in a way.
Yeah, no doubt.
You had talked earlier about you do workshops to impact students' writings. What are some of the things that you teach them, that you help them with in their writings when you have these workshops?
Well, I have this template on my website that you can download, and a lot of kids are finding that it really helps them to put all their ideas down on paper, because, you know, it's a good format for being able to create a story. So what I do is, you know, with the workshop, generally I'll have like a whole grade group, and I tell them, you know, basically this is a safe place. Everybody's important here. So if somebody gives me an idea that you don't like, I don't need any outbursts. We're going to write a picture book, and it's going to be appropriate for a school. So that means you can read it to a kindergartner, and you can read it to the principal and be proud of what you put on paper. And so what's interesting is the kids that are the most reluctant writers are the ones who really get into it, because it's really a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm just a big kid myself, so I just kind of try to make it fun for them. And so I think the point of it is to make the kids understand that your ideas are relevant and important, and let's see what we can do to make it a book. So we go through the who's the story about, where does it happen, when does it happen, why are we writing, and what happens in our story. And they fill in the blanks with me. I'm up at the chalkboard and filling it in as they tell me what they want on it. And then I turn them loose to do something called the verb bank, and that's where they're going to find the active verbs to make the story come alive. And while they're doing that, I write a prompt, and I just sit down and write a rhyming prompt based on what they've just given me. And so then at the end of that, the kids are like, how did you do that? And I said, because I practice. And, you know, because I spend time writing. And so what they do is then I say, so if you guys are interested, you know, finish this story and send it to me in an email, and I'll help you guys with it if you want to continue to do it. And so the teachers will, you know, not all the time, because a lot of times, you know, teachers are so busy with their curriculum, but sure, the teachers that are like a creative writing thing will come and have the kids write this book, and then they send it to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much better than what I wrote. Give them some advice about what to do with it from there, and it's so gratifying to see a student come up with ideas that really populate the book.
What are your next steps as an author, as your writing career? What's coming from Justin?
Well, I'm writing a series, a time travel series, and I'm, you know, I'm hopeful that I can find a publisher for it. It came from a basic idea. My dad and I used to talk all the time on Saturdays, and my dad was a English professor, and he traveled all over the world, and just a very interesting human being. And when my dad died, I started wondering, there's one thing I really didn't know a lot of, and that was, you know, what kind of a teenager was he? And as I started to talk to my uncles and people about that, you know, I found out, you know, my dad was, he was a very sad teenager. And so I started thinking, you know, I just wish I could talk to my dad. And as I started thinking about that, I started thinking about this character who longed to talk to his own dad. And so I started writing this story about this boy who's 13, and he and his dad had always been really close, but as he became a teenager, they started kind of disengaging, and his dad falls off a ladder while they're hanging Christmas lights, and he's in a coma. So Sawyer, the boy, goes into the hospital to talk to him, and there's a nurse there that says, you know, we really believe that people in comas can hear everything you're saying, so tell your dad everything you've always wanted to tell him. So he starts talking to him and telling him, you know, his, you know, how sad he feels about that he just hasn't been a great guy. And so he's got this birthmark on his wrist, and his dad has a tattoo on his wrist, and he remembers that when he was a little boy, whenever he would touch his dad's wrist, he had this kind of out-of-body experience. And so he grabs his dad's wrist, and all of a sudden he travels back in time, and he's in the summer of his dad's 13th year. So they spend the summer together when they're 13 years old together. And
that's your next series coming out?
Yeah.
I have to ask, I really appreciate you coming on the show. If we ask you again, will you come back?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Justin. Hey, man, we appreciate it. Once again, if you order 3 books off the website, you'll get a 4th for free. JustinMatott.com. That's MATOTT.com. His number, 303-525-3817. Thanks for being with us, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Hope you have a great rest of your day. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.